Thank you.
My name's Dick G, and I'm from Vernon Hill, Virginia, and my home group is in South Boston, Virginia, not Massachusetts. He gave me a card here that says the National Rifles Association. I don't know what that means. If I talk too long, I'm only joking. I'm not sure your average AA alcoholic. Most of the alcoholics I hear, their parents were terrible. They took a drink. They were born alcoholic, or they were this, or they were that. And I'm not saying it's wrong, because I don't know what causes alcoholism. AA doesn't know what causes alcoholism. There's some hints in the big book, and there's some hints in the 12 and 12 and all that. But it doesn't tell you exactly how to figure out how you got it. And on top of that, all that's a waste of time. Because, if you got it, you got it. If you got cancer, you got it. Treat it or die. Diabetes are the same thing. You can say, well, I wonder how I got it. I ate too many potatoes, ate too much sugar. And then a guy like me says, well, man, I eat tons of sugar. I eat donuts. I do what's them. And then I don't have it. And then that gives you the resentment. But anyway, I just want to mention a couple things. When I was about 4 or 5 years old, I'm not sure exactly of what happened, but I was eating and I fell off the chair. When I got up and the doctors and everybody got me conscious again, I stuttered. I stuttered so bad I could not say my last name. Terrible, terrible stuttering. And I was raised by my grandparents. And looking at my family life, my mother and my father were smart with the takeoff. I don't blame them. I blame myself. And I like the part where it says in the big book, hadn't I ever took the drink, I'd be like normal people. Now, I'm sure I had a drink before I was 21 years of age, because when I grew up, they had father and son at baseball games, and they had a keg of beer out there, and I'm sure I might have got a little sip of it or something like that. If I had a fever, well, they would give me booze in the tea, or they would rub some on my gums, if I was teething or something like that. But I don't think any of that had anything to do with my alcoholism. I'm not saying I'm right, I'm telling you, I don't think it had anything to do with my alcoholism. I think that something happens. Some people eat too much sugar and they become a diabetic. Some people get cancer and some people don't. Some people drink and they become alcoholic and some people don't. So, anyway, I pound around with a whole bunch of people that drank, kids and all that. We'd steal the beer off the back porches, because back then, they would keep the beer outside. And we went to the parties in the woods and stuff like that, I didn't drink. I don't know why. I wasn't against alcohol or anything. It just didn't cross my mind, and it didn't bother me. And if somebody said, "Hey, Dick, are you drinking?" I'd say, "No, I don't want one." And I was panning around with two or three other kids that didn't drink. The stuff that we were doing, we were working out and odd and end stuff like that. And they didn't drink, and I didn't drink. But at 21 years old, I went to work in the steel industry. That's something that probably young kids have never heard anymore, because it's all gone. Anyway, I met a guy there who was the best at his job in the whole world. Now, I don't mean just USA or England, in the whole world. And they flew him all over the place trying to teach people. And people just couldn't get it, and it's gone now. But anyway, I saw that guy, and the guy was he was a very humble guy, and he wore coveralls. He always had a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, and he was really, really a nice guy. But the only thing I concentrated on, I said, you know, that guy's the best in the world. I know damn right well if I hang around with him in about 3 or 4 weeks, I'll be the best in the world. So I started talking to him and hanging around, and I found out that he drank at Joe Stazak's bar. That's in South Boston. I mean, that's in Baltimore County, Maryland. I should have known something, because Joe Stazak, who was a state senator, owned the bar, and he didn't drink. You know, but it didn't cross my mind at all. Anyway, I went in the bar, and I saw Fred sitting over there, and Fred had a small glass of booze, and he had a beer chaser. And, I didn't know what to order, so I said, give me the same thing that Fred's got. And the bartender tried to talk me out of it. You know, and I'm telling him, just give me the same thing Fred's got. And Fred came over. And Fred said, what's the trouble? You know, and I told him, and Fred said, he said, kid, you can't drink that stuff. I said, I can drink any damn thing that you can drink. Now, Fred, he would have been a good sponsor in AA, because he shut up. Reached in his pocket, pulled out $20, laid it on the bar, and said, give that kid anything he wants, and he walked away. And I got my shot and beer. And the next thing I know, I woke up at home. They say I fell off the stool, but I don't remember any of it. I mean, I just woke up at home. Now, I don't think that was alcoholic drinking. I think that was stupid drinking. I mean, you know what I mean? I wasn't drinking all that much, and here I am, I'm trying to drink like Fred. But anyway, I started drinking, and booze helped me. I mean, I'd go to work, I'd be on a new job, I'd be a little nervous or something, I'd take a little pill. And the next thing you know, I said, man, I can do that job. And I would do it, and it would work out absolutely good. And everything would go fine. But once in a while, I'd drink a little too much, and the job would get a little mixed up. You know what I mean? I'd push this slab on when I was supposed to push this one over here, and sometimes I could correct it, and the boss wouldn't even catch it. but I would know that I drank too much. So consequently, I kept on drinking. And somewhere along the line, I had this old guy named Lou. He told me when I became an alcoholic. He said, Dick, it was after your first drink, and it was before your last drink. And that's when I became an alcoholic. I don't really know when it was. I'm sure I had some of those alcoholic tendencies that we see in the book and all that stuff like that. I mean, I went to Catholic school. I went to St. Clement's in Baltimore County, Maryland. And my poor grandmother, who didn't have, too much money, would give us a couple pennies and all that. And then when we got our hair cut, I went to Henny Hickman's. My wife hates this story. That's my wife with the blue one down there, that pretty blonde. But anyway, Henny Hickman, he would put a steel bowl on your head and cut your hair around. Now, I didn't stand a two out, a lot of people got their hair cut that way because they couldn't afford fancy haircuts. But there was one or two, three, maybe three or four people who went down to a place called George's. and they got a good haircut. And I used to say to myself, man, I'm getting a haircut like that one day. So I started taking the money that she gave me for the poor box, taking the collection, saving my lunch pennies that I got for lunch. And then I got my Henny Hickman's haircut money, and I went down George's and got a haircut. And I came out of there, and I felt taller. I walked better. I felt good. I mean, I honestly felt real good. Now, I don't know whether that was leading towards my alcoholism or not. But there's a line that says that we choose comfort over character. So maybe, I mean, you know what I mean? I was moving that way maybe. I don't know. But anyway, so I started drinking. And I didn't like the word alcoholic. I just could not believe I was an alcoholic. You know what I mean? I mean, I would drink and I'd get drunk and I would embarrass myself. I would embarrass my children. I would go to the PTA meeting, have a couple of belts of before, you know what I mean, going to be a good father. And then I'd start shooting my mouth off and embarrassing my children, embarrassing my former wife and all that stuff like that. And then afterwards, so when the booze wore off, I always said to myself, geez, what's the matter with me? What the heck's wrong with me? I had this guy named George Blamble. He was my best friend. I really loved George Blamble. I met him at work. I mean, you know, I was drinking at work. And George, he used to drink at work, but George became the counselor for Spires Point. And George, I used to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous a lot. I don't think George learned too much about the traditions. But anyway, I mean, you know, he was a good guy. And every time he talked about Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd find a dirty, lousy job for him. He was like 6'6", 800 pounds, you know what I mean, a great big guy. And I would find the smallest hole I could find and say, George, clean that hole out for me. Day in and day out. Well, anyway, my drinking, it got so bad. I had some pressure. I had some people, start to talking about my drinking. And I don't know why, but I said to George, are you going to a AA meeting? And he said, yeah. I said, I think I'll go with you. Now, George could have said, go with me, you bum. All them damn sloppy jobs you gave me. And everything like that. I'm not taking you anywhere. All he said was, okay. And he took me to my first AA meeting. And I had contempt prior to investigation because I walked in. They're all dressed nice, just like you people are. Met in a church. And my mind's adding all this up. I met in a church. You know, and I'm sitting there. And then they start talking about God. And I said, oh, man, I ain't joining that outfit. You know? So I didn't come back. And I stayed out there for 5 years. But the one thing AA always did for me, it planted the seed. It always let me know if I wanted to do something about my alcoholism. It was here. Nobody tried to pressure me. Nobody tried to browbeat me. I have alcoholism, which is a illness. And the reason why I know that, it says so in here. It doesn't call it a disease. It calls it a illness. I think it's on somewhere around 23, 24, or something like that. But I didn't want to be a labeled alcoholic. My drinking got so bad, I wanted to do something about it, but I didn't want to be labeled alcoholic. So, I couldn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I made feeble attempts to drink, and it got worse, and it got worse, and it got worse, and it always gets worse. What fooled me was, it would get terrible, And I would start to feel, you know, remorse and shame and all that stuff. And then I would go drinking and everything went okay. Not a problem in the world. I might even have come home with more money than I started with. No hangover. No, I mean, everything was wonderful. And I thought, you know, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm doing something wrong. Which meant I could fix it. You know, and I always tried to figure that out. I couldn't figure out why sometimes it went absolutely great drinking. And then other times, but the other times were getting worse and getting worse and getting worse. So I tried everything I could do to keep from coming to AA. I tried not drinking. I tried the anti-abuse pill. And the only thing about that anti-abuse pill was it worked. You know, I mean, I was fearful. They told me if I drank on it, I was going to die. Possibly die. I don't think they said I was going to die, but they said possibly die. And so City Hospital at that time in Baltimore, it was a little hill. And my drinking, I mean, by this time I'd done lost driver's license and everything like that. So I'm walking up the hill, and I would say to myself, I'm not climbing this hill no more. What the hell was wrong with me? Why do I got to go up there and have some nurse give me a pill? And then they start crushing it because they didn't trust me. Can you believe that? They start crushing it. And I thought, you know, this is crazy. But I would go, I mean, because I knew my drinking was creating a problem. I mean, I was getting penalties at work and missing work and overspending money. And my kids were saying things to me like, hey, Dad, can you get us tennis shoes? And I said, what do you mean get you tennis? Of course I can get you tennis shoes. I'm a big steel worker. I said, why? And they said, because we're the only two people taking gym in our hard shoes and everybody's making fun of us. And it went right into my soul. I thought, jeez. I said, Friday, I'll buy them shoes. And I went to work and I bragged everybody at work. Friday, man, I'm taking my kids shopping. I'm going to get them tennis shoes Friday. Friday came and they said, Dick, are you going to stop and have a couple? I said, yeah, but I got to be out of there by 4 o'clock. I'd start drinking and I don't know what the hell happened. The lights would be blinking. You don't have to go home, but you got to get the hell out of here. You know, and I would say to myself, man, what the hell happened? I didn't plan on being a sloppy drunk. I didn't plan on being a bad father. I didn't plan on all that stuff. It just seemed to me, it just kind of rolled in. It's like cooking a pie, you know what I mean? I mean, you know, the heat's there, but it takes time, and it just kind of roll in there. So I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous after 5 years. And I kind of believed I knew what the... I did believe I was an alcoholic. But I didn't really believe what that meant. Except that I'm drinking too much. So I got this contempt prior to investigation again. And I'm saying, I ain't drinking. And I hear people say, well, you know, if you don't have a conscious contact with your higher power, you might get drunk today. And I'm saying in my head, I mean, because, you know, I don't want to be the odd guy out. You know what I mean? I want to sound like all the other good AAers. But, I mean, you know, in my head, I'm saying, I didn't pray today and I didn't want to drink, you know, and I ain't getting drunk. That's okay for some of these born-again Christians or people like that. I mean, but I don't have to do that. And I'm hanging around AA, and I didn't drink, and I'm going to AA, and I learned all the jingles. I mean, you know, everything that you hear around AA, you know what I mean? And in fact, I'm in the back talking to a newcomers. And I'm giving them good information. I mean, you know, I'm not giving them a bad information. I'm telling them, keep coming back. you'll be okay. And 4 months later, I'm sitting in a bar. I'm drunk. Now that took the starch out of me because I didn't believe I was doing anything wrong. I mean, I heard I was doing something wrong, but I didn't believe it. I didn't understand what alcoholism is. I understand what too much drinking did. I understood what not drinking does. I mean, the life gets better of just not taking a drink. I mean, you know. And I'm not one that's against a dry drunk. I mean, being dry is better than being drunk, I can tell you that. So, I mean, you know, if you're here and you're not doing nothing, you just keep coming back. But anyway, I just happened. I got to where being drunk, when I got tired, I laid down. I tried a feeble's attempt at killing myself. I mean, you know, I come up with all these great ideas, you know what I mean? I'll climb out on those fences. You know, those fences come up and they tilt in. Well, you can't go over the top of them. But you can go to the end and work your way out over top of 95. And I would say to God, please let me let go. I didn't want to live anymore. I didn't want to live that way of life. I just couldn't figure out what to do. I was hearing what to do, but it just didn't click. And then I guess the booze would wear off or something, because I realized what the hell I was doing. And getting back was tougher. You know what I mean? Because my toes wasn't going in them little rings and everything, and I'm like, geez, what's going on here? You know? But I tried, I mean, different things like that. I laid on the railroad tracks one time, 4 hours. I woke up, you know, and I walked away. You know what I mean? I don't know why the train didn't come. I guess it was a freight train, you know, and I thought it was a what's name. But I want to tell you, there's a lot of good people in this world. Speaking of trains, I was 18 years old. I was going to school with a kid that was... His name was Jackie Kerr. He would have been an outstanding football player, baseball player. I mean, he was just an absolute superstar with sports and a great guy. And him and I are walking down a Pennsylvania a railroad. It's four tracks wide. And we're walking down a railroad. And I don't know why, but I turned around and I looked and there was a train coming. I jumped one way. He jumped the other way. He jumped right in front of the train. And it was such a shock, I went into a shock at home. His mother came to my house every day and talked to me. Now, there is a love of, you know, I sometimes think that, you know, I think that AA is the only place where people love people, you know what I mean? But she came to my house every day. But anyway, so I came back to AA. I was actually sleeping up in an alley next to a, I don't know if anybody knows about anything about Baltimore, but it was Ponca there. It was right next to where, I guess 95 goes through now, anyway. Anyway, I got tired and I laid down. And that's what I do. You know what I mean? I get drunk and I just say, I don't care. If I walk up to a puddle and I'm drunk, I just say, hey, I got a 50-50 chance of a jump in the puddle and I got a 50-50 chance on not. And I would jump and I would land in the water and I'd say, okay, you know, and I missed it. You know, I didn't care anymore. I lost my job, lost my house, lost my self-respect, everything. Anyway, this guy George, who was a cutting hair, he saw me, non-alcoholic now. He took the time, picked me up, and took me down to the Dundalk AA meeting on a Tuesday night. Now, George wasn't an alcoholic. I mean, now that's another little act of love that, I mean, the people out there do it every day. I mean, we think that we're special. I mean, the people out there do that stuff every day. Anyway, I was sitting in that AA meeting, and I wasn't hearing the word sober. I wasn't hearing nothing. I was just in my head saying, why don't I walk in front of a tractor trailer? My family doesn't deserve this. What the heck is wrong with me? But fortunately, there was an old guy by the name of Lou. And he walked over and he said, what's the matter, Dick? I said, I got drunk. He said, big deal. Alcoholics get drunk around AA every day. And that's true. The odds are somebody in this room is going to get drunk. That doesn't mean you have to. That's just the odds. Somebody in AA is getting drunk every day. And I mumbled. Well, I tried. And he said, I know you didn't, Dick. You got alcoholism. There better be a God or you're up the creek. He said it with a little stronger language, but anyway. And I don't know why. I guess because he cared, he spoke in some sort of a voice or something. I mumbled, please tell me how to get sober. And he said, Dick, I can't tell you how to get sober. I can tell you how I did it. And he started talking to me about alcoholism. And then after that, he told me to call him 3 o'clock in the morning. So about 2 o'clock in the morning, I said, okay, you know what I mean? No problem. But about 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm saying, did he say 3 p.m. or did he say 3 a.m.? What? I mean, you know, I don't want to be some jerk and call him 3 o'clock in the morning. But for some reason, I didn't want to be wrong. So I called him. And I said, Lou, he said, who'd you call? I said, you. He said, yep, it's me. He said, if you can call me at 3 o'clock in the morning, you can call me anytime. And he hung up. I never had to call him again. I knew where the guy's home group was. I knew where his house was. I knew he cared. I knew I could call him. I just didn't have to. I saw him all the time. I went to meetings at the same place that Lou went to. And slowly but surely, I mean, we'd be talking about things and talk about alcoholism. And once in a while, he would slip something in. Like I told you about, I mean, you know, I'd be saying, well, I didn't pray and I didn't get drunk. He said, Dick, it says in this book, I'm going to guess at page 24. It says that every alcoholic, every, not just me or Junior or Sam or Lois or anything like that, every alcoholic, there's going to come a time in their life where they're going to drink or not based on the maintenance of their spiritual, I mean, a condition. You ain't got time to call your great sponsor. You ain't going to have time to do nothing. You either got it or you don't. You're either going to drink or you don't. Well, by this time, I didn't want any mites. I didn't want any, well, if you do this, you might stay sober. You know what I mean? Of the stuff I was taught, I don't get sober anymore. My friend Michael says this all the time. You know what I mean? I have recovered from a seemingly state of body and mind. I recover every day, one day at a time. But what Lou did, he gave me evidence. He didn't just give me information. He gave me evidence. It's like some doctor. I mean, if some doctor tells you something, he can give you evidence. He can get the medical book out and say, hey, look, this is it. That's what he did to me. Slowly but surely, he started to give me evidence. He made me believe, with the evidence, that I needed a higher power. And that, and then he talked about it. He made me think about the first step, not just say, oh, okay, he can, I can, I'll do it, and all that stuff. He said, Dick, if you're an alcoholic, you need a higher power. If you're not an alcoholic, you know what I mean? No, you don't need a higher power. You may just be a drunken bum. I mean, who knows, you know what I mean? So I thought about that higher power. I had to come to grips with it. Now, I'm not saying I got the same higher power back then, because as I stayed sober, my higher power, and reading the book and applying the principles of AA, it slowly evolved. I didn't get a doorknob, but I didn't get no understanding of a higher power. That's probably why it's back. It talks about a creator and all that stuff a little ways down the line. You know what I mean? Because a guy like me would be, you know, contempt prior to investigation. I don't need that. You know what I mean? But slowly but surely, I started following his path. And I started applying the 12 Steps to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, I would say to Lou, I'd say, well, you know, I don't know whether I'm doing this right or not. He said, Dick, the most important thing is to do the best of your ability at the time when you do it. Be honest with yourself. Did I do the best I could at the time? If you did, God will give you time and God will give you a sobriety to correct everything that you ever missed. And that has been my experience. I have had experiences where the drink presented itself and I didn't have time enough to call my sponsor. I didn't have time, nothing. I either drank or not based on what I did that morning. And it talks about planning my day. You know what I mean? Mine was, okay, I'm going to wake up, I'm going to work, and I'm going to make a lot of money. You know what I mean? Well, I mean, you know, I plan my day to day. But I start off, as soon as my eyes open up, I say, thank you, God. And then I go about the business of trying to seek up some sort of a understanding with my higher power through prayer and through a meditation. And then I go and live my day. Does everything go right? Nope. Sometimes I make stupid mistakes. I got two hearing aids. And I'm always visiting this hearing aid person because I guess I'm not supposed to criticize bell tone, so I'm not going to tell you what type of hearing aids they are. But anyway, I always get this flyer. And the flyer used to say, 2 packs of hearing aids are for $9. But I guess they got a new secretary, I guess. You know what I mean? I don't know why. But anyway, I got the flyer this month, and it said, 1 pack of hearing aids for $4.50. Contempt prior to investigation. It jumped in my mind. So I went down, and I saw him, and he tuned up my hearing aids. And I said to him, I said, you raised your prices, huh? He said, why? I said, well, I said, you used to give me 2 packs for $9. Now you're charging me $4.50 for 1 pack. And the guy looked at me kind of funny, and he said, well, what's $4.50 plus $4.50? And I said, $9. He said, but that stupid act didn't make me think of taking a drink. It didn't make me embarrassed enough that, I'm going to run to the bar and I can't face him anymore or anything like that. I said to myself, boy, that was stupid. And I have that type of stuff. I don't have that drunken shame anymore. Anything I did all day this day, you could put on the front page of the newspaper and it wouldn't, it might, embarrass me because I got an ego and I think I'm a little better than what I think I am. But I mean, you know, I wouldn't have to run to the bottle. I wouldn't have to hide. I wouldn't have to, feel like or the dumbest person around. I've had good things happen. I mean, since I got. Anyway, I want to tell you a little story. I told you about my stutter. And I mean, I really stuttered. They're just crazy. Well, one time, my sponsor, he's talking to three other people. I'm at this meeting, and there's like 100 people in the meeting. But he's my sponsor. I don't have to be polite. I come up, just butt right in, you know, because it's my sponsor. You know, I go right up, and I say, Lou. And Lou turned around, and he never spoke in a loud voice, but he spoke real loud. And he said, "Don't you stop that stuttering." And everybody in the room's looking, you know, and I'm turning red, you know what I mean? They look like that. And I said, whoa, how am I going to do that? He said, "Shut up." He said, "I've never heard anybody stutter that didn't talk. Just shut up every time you're going to stutter." Now, if I had had a gun, I'd have shot him. I was embarrassed. I went outside that meeting, and boy, I was hot. I turned red. I was embarrassed. But I said to myself, I ain't stuttering no more. My grandmothers had lit candles. I went to John Hopkins speech therapy. I went to Dale Carnegie speech and thing. Everybody's tried to teach me how to stop stuttering. And I said, I ain't stuttering no more. When I go to stutter, I'm shutting up. And that's what I did. I went to the next meeting, and they asked me to read the prologue. Took me 20 minutes to read the prologue. 20 minutes. Nobody said, "Give it to me. Give it to me, dummy," or anything. They all sat there. You talk about tolerance and love. They just sat there. And every time I went to stutter, I shut up. And I would start again. And the pauses got shorter and shorter and shorter. But don't tell anybody, "Oh, that's why I'm pausing." I mean, because they think you really like thinking about what you're going to say. It's really, I don't want to stutter. I learned some principles off of that guy to treat other people the way I want to be treated. You know, and I didn't do it because I wanted to be a good guy. He said, "Dicker, when you're saying the Lord's Prayer, think about it, what you're saying. Don't just say it because everybody else is saying it. Think about that Lord's Prayer." And I did, you know what I mean? I started thinking about it. And that started changing me a little at a time. I started noticing before my kids needed to throw their tennis shoes away. I started noticing they needed new shoes. I started realizing going to work, they didn't come to me and drag me down there. I went there looking for a job. So I would start giving them a decent day's work. And it started paying off. And then one of these AAers, they said, "Now, Dick, you got to go back and tell all that stuff that you stole off Bethlehem Steel. If you're missing anything, if you own a company, a big company, and you're missing anything, salary people and pickup trucks, that's what you got to look at. Because nobody checks the salary people coming, and nobody wants to look at a pickup truck." So anyway, so I kind of borrowed some stuff from Bethlehem Steel. So I went back, and I really didn't want to do it because I was sober, I was progressing, I was in management, I'm doing a good job, everything seems to be okay. Why should I rock the boat? And Lou said, "Dick, you can't be looking over your shoulder all your life. You got to straighten it out." And he said, "Go over there and talk to Jack Hunter." And I went over there and I talked to a guy named Jack. And Jack told me he had to do the same thing. And I'm worried about I am never going to get a good job anymore. And then he said, and the company I worked for, Dick, was Farris Point, Maryland. I thought, damn, man, that's the same company I worked for. He said, and after I did that, he said, the people looked at me a little bit. He said, but I did a good job, and I progressed right on up. And Jack became the plant manager. So I kind of decided I was going to tell him, and I went down and I told him. And they said, well, look, we don't have any way of collecting that stuff back. We either fire you or else we keep you. And you're doing a good job, so we're going to keep you. So I came out of there. I called Lou up, and I told Lou all about it. I said, everything went well, Lou. I was a little embarrassed about it. But other than that, everything went well. I said, they said that they can't fix it or they're going to keep me. He said, well, let's think about that a little bit. Let's not jump at the conclusions of when we do something and it turns out out of the way. Like I was drunk one time and I was driving up this road and there was a twin kiss there. And there was a young girl at the window serving ice cream. And I was all drunked up and I almost hit that building and I swerved the thing and I hit a tree. And I'm bragging about that, about AA. I almost killed that girl. I said, but man, I'll tell you one thing, I hit the tree. I said, my higher power was looking after me. And this old guy said, yeah, Dick, maybe it wasn't your higher power, maybe it was hers. I got to think about them things once in a while. I got to think about, just because I didn't kill somebody all drunked up, that God's pulling the strings for me. Maybe that girl was applying the principles of that day, and maybe it saved her life. Anyway, Lou said to me, he said, you get a salary? I said, yeah. He said, divide it by 40 hours, and that's what an hour is worth to you. He said, I want you to work through your lunchtime until you can look yourself in a mirror and say, I have paid that money back. He said, and that's not the hard part. The hard part is when they're calling you brown noser and suck up and all that stuff like that, you keep your mouth shut. You don't tell them why you're doing it. You just continue doing it. And I did that. And it seemed like by following the good advice of the AA people, just trying to apply the principles, I'd apply them over here and it wouldn't be so hot, but I'd apply them here and they'd be a little bit better. I'd apply them here and they would, they're doing pretty good. I started getting promoted. And I started getting promotions after promotions after promotions. I got this job, and I worked hard at it, and and this general foreman, he was leaving, and he said, when I'm leaving, Dick's getting my job. And in fact, he didn't leave for 2 years later, and everybody knew I was going to get the job, so they treated me real good, I want to be a buddy of Dick's, he's going to be our boss. I came in Monday morning, because I said, Dick, did you hear what happened? I said, no. They said, Chuck Lamb, I got the general foreman's job. Now, I'm sober a while. You would think that I would say, oh, that's okay. Chuck's a good guy. I felt, man, I earned that job. That should be my job. And in fact, I went back and I told Lou, I said, I worked hard for that. And I did work hard for that job. I should have got that job. And Lou said, well, let me think about this. He said, who would you have picked for the job? And I picked this other guy, and the guy that got the job. He said, damn, Dick, you got your second choice. How many people in life get their second choices? He said, I want you to go back, and I want you to make that guy the best general foreman going. And I went back, and it was spicy in the beginning. He'd say to me, hey, Dick, what about this? And I'd say, you're the boss. You don't know? But after a few months, the things got settled down. I started practicing other principles a little bit better. And Chuck and I became a very good friends, absolute good friends. You know, and I'm going along, and I forgot all about them not getting a job. 5 years later, I walked in on a Monday morning again. They said, "Dick, did you hear what happened?" I said, "Nope." Now, Chuck's working 60 hours a week, and I'm working 60 hours a week. I mean, both salary, you know what I mean? The job just called for that many hours. You know, it's just the way it worked. And they said, the CEO, who must have been a drunk, because he signed a memo saying anybody who wasn't a general foreman got paid their overtime. Now, Chuck got a $10,000 raise on when he got the job I should have got, and I got a hell of a lot more than that, I mean, by getting paid to my overtime. And I said to myself, man, I'm glad I didn't get that job. I mean, that's the way things work. And to do up to that job, I get a decent pension. Because it's all based on earnings, you know. And poor Chuck was just stuck with that general foreman's job. But anyway. So, I mean, the things that's gotten pretty good for me. The other thing is, I used to hear in the promises, I want to regret the past. And my oldest daughter, for some reason, she just would not let go of my drinking. And I'm sober. I'd go to the birthday parties, and she would bring up, "I remember when my dad was drunk at the bottom of the steps, and, you know, and look, here's a picture of him holding the can," you know what I mean? And the bad part about it, all that stuff was true. But anyway, I used to say, and I told Lou about it, and Lou said, "Hey, she's telling the truth, and all you can say is, it ain't that way today." You know, and I would go to the birthday parties, and I go to this, and she would, you know, be talking about my drinking and just negative to the old time, and I'd say, "Well, it ain't that way today, Sandy." And I would say, "You know, I don't understand these promises." And they said, "Dick, sometimes they come quickly, and sometimes they come slowly. You keep keeping your side of the street clean." And I did. You know, I kept my side of the street clean. I'm sober 25 years, and she's still going on it. You know what I mean? I'm cracking my 28 years, and she's still going on it. But before my 29th year, she came to me, and she said, "All I want is my daddy back." But she wrote me a nice little letter. "I love you." And she's never did that since. We have a great, great relationship. My other daughter sent me a fax. This is when faxes just came out. Now it's email and all that stuff, you know what I mean? But she sent me a fax, and it was a stick girl, you know, a round head with just a leg. And it had an ice cream cone, holding an ice cream cone, and dots of the ice cream fell on the ground. And she said to me, she said, "I remember when my daddy took me to New York. I was sober at the time. And my ice cream fell to the ground. And all my daddy did was go get me another ice cream. He didn't scream or nothing, you know what I mean?" But the other thing that happened to me was, I was drunk. I went to my cousin's wedding. He rented the whole West Virginia Hotel. I know the name of the town, but I can't think of it. Wheeling, West Virginia. Rented the whole hotel. There was 1,000 people there of the brides. And he had 6 relatives he invited. I was one of them. Everybody said, "Dick, please don't drink going up there." And I went up there, stopped at Breezewood, had to go to the bathroom, got a shot while I was in there. Went to the wedding, and all the while I'm telling myself, I'm not gonna drink. Anyway, I got drunk. I embarrassed him, embarrassed the what's name. But Billy's a good guy. I mean, you know, he's not flamboyant or anything. He said, "Dick, can I talk to you?" I said, "Sure." He said, "Dick, if I never see you again, it'll be too soon." And he turned around and he walked away. Now, this guy is my hero. I mean, mean, he is just an absolute good guy. Very intelligent, tall, Rich Helps. He's just a good guy. Well, anyway, I got sober. And Christmas Eve, I get a knock on the door. Open the door, and there stands Billy. I said, "Billy, what are you doing here?" He said, "Well," he said, "I wanted to bring your Christmas present here. I got a quick turnaround, so I can't stay long." He said, "Can we go down a basement?" He lives on the north side of San Francisco, so I figured maybe this is some sort of a joke or something. Anyway, we went down the basement. He gave me the present. I opened it up. He said, "Do you know what this is?" And I'm thinking, well, Bill, I'm not stupid. It's a chalkboard, and it's got chalk with it. He said, "That's not a chalkboard. That's a slate. It's clean. I love you." I've had thousands of good things that happened to me since I got sober. But the best thing that ever happened to me was somebody told me the truth. "Dick, you got alcoholism. You will drink any day. Every day you're subject to picking up a drink if you don't follow the principles of AA. You want to roll the dice? Roll them." I don't want to roll the dice. I don't want to go back. I don't want to take any chances. And I like this way of life. I did it because I had to. I did it because I wanted to. I do it because I love my higher power today. And I kind of like AA. Thank you very much.